Livewire with Jason Moyle.
Hello, my name is Jason Moyle, and I'm pleased to say that joining us on Livewire today is singer, songwriter, and actor Daniel James. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Jason. Nice to speak to you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Right, well, you've had a very distinguished career because you actually started singing back at school. So tell us a bit about that.
I did. Well, to be honest with you, I got into the National Youth Theatre when I was about 14, but my dad wouldn't let me go. I'm originally from the northeast of England, and I think my dad thought, you know, he was scared witless about me spending the summer in London on my own. Of course, I know I'd have been fine, but so I never got to go to the National Youth Theatre, so I just concentrated on doing stuff in the local area in the northeast, and I was just singing in bands and singing in, you know, doing everything that you could to try and make progress, really. And then eventually I left home and I moved to London, and I knocked on doors, if the truth be told. I started off doing, do you remember those photo stories that magazines, My Guy, Oh Boy, you probably didn't look at them because you were probably looking at boys' magazines, but loads of girls used to read like My Guy, Oh Boy and all of that. And to pay the rent, I would do modelling, like photo stories. And I can remember being in a laundrette in Notting Hill. And I didn't take my pants off. That was the other guy. But I remember doing that photo story. Then I remember doing another one in Elephant and Castle. And I just would go all over London, you know, trying to obviously pay the rent and also move forward with my career. And it all started when I was at school. I think the first job I did for one of those magazines, I was 15. And my mum let me, after my dad, I kicked up such a fuss because my dad wouldn't let me come to London. I kicked up such a fuss that eventually when I got offered this magazine to do this magazine cover and the photo story, I kicked up such a fuss that my mum said to me, Dad, oh, let him go. He'll soon get, you know, I think their thought was, right, he'll grow out of this. He'll get bored with it. You know, because they'd seen me play Joseph in the school play, but my mum and dad were really normal, no show business in the family at all. So consequently, you know, me running around knocking on doors and singing and acting left, right and centre, it took them a long while to get used to it, to be honest.
Okay, because you did the Song for Europe, didn't you?
And Song for Europe was a song called No Easy Way to Love. It's on YouTube, you can see it. And it was written by Tony Hiller, who was a stalwart of Eurovision. He wrote Save Your Kisses for Me for Brotherhood of Man.
Okay.
So he wrote No Easy Way to Love, which was a big ballad with two guys called Bradley and Stuart James, who had co-written Nick Berry's Every Loser Wins. So the pedigree was great. Anyway, I do the Wogan show, and then I do the Song for Europe, and all's going well, you know, it's all looking really good, and I came fourth. So then I presented Children's BBC, and I used to do the birthdays on a morning and a series called But First This with Andy Crane.
I remember
and a
that.
Lady called, yeah, well, there was a lady on it called Sue Devaney. Now, Sue Devaney plays Kevin Webster's sister in Coronation Street, but she was young like I was then, and we had great fun. We'd go all over. On the last episode of Children's BBC, we had managers and record pluggers coming in with their groups, and I got to know a guy called Jeff Chegwin, and he went, oh, he said, have you just finished the show? I said, actually, it's finished. The series is finished for the summer. And he went, what are you going to do now? I said, I'm going to go back into my singing. I said, you know, I've been writing some songs. He went, oh, I didn't know you sung. He said, that sounds great. He said, come and see me in the office next week. Anyway, I had a meeting with Jeff, played him some songs, and he said, I want you to meet someone. Anyway, I ended up meeting another guy who played keyboards, and we ended up teaming up. I came up with the name Yell because I'd seen a TV series on a Sunday afternoon on what then was called London Weekend Television. And Janet Street Porter was presenting it, and she'd done something on New Romantics, and she'd had this guy in a basement who yelled for 24 hours.
Okay.
And he kept saying the word Yell. And I thought, you know what? It's not a bad name for a band. So I came up with the name Yell, got together with the other guy. I wrote a whole album's worth of material with him. And the group started to take off. We gigged all over the country.
Okay.
Because, you know, you play those clubs and bars and, you know, your first time you go on, you're dodgy in bottles. You learn to work an audience. You learn what songs work. Because, you know, we'd be writing songs during the week and then performing them at night.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we were in Ibiza. And we were in this bar about 2 a.m. in the old town. We'd been out, and they had like a little patio, and a DJ. Well, he put the original version of Instant Replay on.
Yeah, Dan Hartman.
Yeah. What a cracker. Yeah. You know. Well, this was 2 a.m. The floor filled. Well, before we'd left to go to Ibiza, we'd met Simon Cowell. We'd done a couple of showcases for record companies as Yell, and we'd had a few offers from record companies. So we ended up signing with Simon Cowell's label, Fanfare Records. Simon had said, look, guys, have a think while you're away. I want to do a cover version as your first single. Well, I was gutted because I write songs, and I'd written songs for the album, up-tempo and ballads, and I saw myself as like a proper singer-songwriter. So I was pretty gutted. Anyway, when we were in this bar, Instant Replay came on, and I looked at Paul, and it was such a good song. I said, you know what? This could be our cover version, because it's not a naff cover. We got back to London, and of course Simon Cowell was in his office, and we went to meet him in the week, and we walked in. Now, bear in mind, we'd been in Ibiza, two lads, you know, thinking we were cool as cucumbers, arrived back in London, suntanned, looking sharp. Of course, we walk into Simon's office. He's got his feet upon his desk in his leather chair. It's more suntanned than we are. And I walked in, I went, typical of you, Simon. We've been on holiday, sunning it. We walk in the door, and you can top us with a tan. Anyway, he roared with laughter, and he said, right, boys, have you had a think about a cover version? I said, well, actually, I've come up with one. And he said, what is it? He thought, you know, because he knew we hadn't had Rouse, but we'd had Barney's, because I didn't want to be a cover version band.
Okay.
We'd had a lot of sort of heated arguments about it. He always respected my opinion, but, well, it was his label and his money. Anyway, so he's got his feet up in his office, and he says, tell me, Daniel, which song have you come up with a like, kind of lifted eyebrow like Roger Moore in The Saint? And I said, Instant Replay, Dan Hartman. Well, you're not going to believe this. His feet fell off the table because he'd had his feet up, and he had the Guinness Book of Hit Singles on the table. He knocked it on the floor, and he said, would you pick that up for me? I picked it up for him. He thumbed it with his fingers, and he gave it back to me. And there was one corner turned over.
He had it sat
the night before, and he picked Instant Replay.
Oh, brilliant.
And he thought he was going to have a hard job persuading me to do it. And, of course, I'd already chosen it. Now, that was fate. So finally, I kind of relented and thought, this must be meant to be. So we recorded Instant Replay. We had a smash hit with it. We toured all over the world, and we had the most amazing, amazing time. And, of course, for me, the biggest thrill, or one of the biggest thrills, was going back to the BBC TV Centre, where I'd been a cheerleader and I did the warm-up, and I went back as an artist. Oh, can you imagine what a thrill that was?
Absolutely,
It took, you know, and we were on Top of the Pops a couple of times, and as I say, Yell had a, we'd been together about 3 or 4 years, and then the album came out, we were number one in Japan, and we toured all over, and then the group folded.
Yeah.
Suddenly, overnight, it happened without me even knowing. I woke up one morning, I opened a tabloid, and the group was no more. And it was very, very difficult for me because I'd put my life into that group. And, you know, I lost everything. It was a terrible time for me. I don't mind admitting, you know, I had a nervous breakdown, and I took a long time to get over it. I left the business, and a couple of years later, well, I moved to America, and I lived in America for a while. And I went back to my acting.
Okay,
and I
yeah.
did, you know, I did an off-Broadway workshop of a play called The Feast of Alexander. I had a really nice part in that. And I went to Los Angeles, and I did some TV in Los Angeles. I did a TV show over there called Passions, which was on NBC. I did some internet stuff, and when the group had folded. So I eventually came back to England and got back into acting, and I ended up having some roles in Coronation Street, in Bad Girls, if you can remember Bad Girls.
Oh, yes, I do remember that, yeah.
I was in The Last Tango in Halifax as a vicar.
Okay.
Burying Sarah Lancashire's partner in that. And just before lockdown, I had an episode of EastEnders.
And then you went back to music. You after lockdown, you went back to music.
You know how that happened? When the lockdown came, obviously in the very first lockdown, everybody was very obedient. And although I'm originally from the northeast of England, and that's most of my family are there or in Kent, I was stuck on my own in London. And I live right in the middle of the city. And it was a nightmare in the first lockdown because I was on my own. All my family were miles away. But I'd save my time up and I'd go for long walks in the night. And, you know, I was on my own. So it was all safe distancing. And I started to think about my life and the lockdown. And I, somebody asked me, I'm a trained fitness instructor, and someone asked me if I'd go online and do some Zoom fitness classes for people in care homes because no one was going in to see them. Well, I did some Zoom sessions just to try and give them break up their day, you know, and I'd put some music on, I'd do some light exercises, sing along, and just generally trying to lift their spirits. But I saw some really sad things. And one night I was out walking and this beat just came into my head. Now, bear in mind, I hadn't written a song in ages. I had not touched anything in the music business since just after Yell broke up. I'd had a little foray when not long after Yell broke up, I wrote some songs and I was signed to George Michael's publisher, Dick Leahy, for a while.
Okay.
But after that, I didn't touch the music business because I was just so scarred. And I felt battered. Anyway, innocently, out walking, first lockdown, been doing something for a care home, and I was quite emotionally moved by what I'd seen. And I thought, when the world turns its head, there are people around me with their hearts in their mouths, not knowing the right way they should turn. Watching hair turning grey, seeing children turn into adults, days running away, it's falling apart at the seams. They've got to let us go. They've got to let us know. They've got to set our spirits free. And suddenly that poured out of me. I raced home, got my phone out, sang that into the phone, went to bed. Because if you don't put it down, when you go to bed, you won't remember it the next morning. Anyway, got up the next morning, listened to it, started to put some beats to it. That night, I was out that door like a rocket. Up the hill, second verse written. Third night out, chorus, bridge written, song, you know, came home, worked on it. And then the songs, it was like a dam had broken. The songs just kept pouring out of me. So I thought, I'm going to release one of these songs. Can I tell you the thrill of standing in the studio? To stand in the studio again with the headphones on, it was, I mean, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere, but it was just like medicine to me.
Yes.
Anyway, recorded these songs. And that was it as far as I was concerned. I was just happy. Played them to some friends and they said, why don't you put them on Spotify? Put a couple of songs on Spotify. And these local radio stations and internet radio stations started picking up on it. Suddenly my songs are getting played. And I thought, I'm going to release one of these. So I released Set Your Spirit Free. And loads of internet radio stations were playing it. I was thrilled. And then I got asked to do interviews like this one. And I was pouring out my story. And it not only was helping me, it was like therapy. But I started to believe in myself again. Because seriously, you know, at one point during when Yell ended, sometimes in life, things can hit you at certain times in your life and you can't fight back. Yeah. So for me to release a record again, you know, no, I didn't have a big record company behind me. I was on my own. That was like medicine for me. So Set Your Spirit Free came out, and then I'm asked to do radio interviews and gigs. And then I bring another one out, Don't Want to Lose That Girl. I make a video for it, which is on my video channel, my YouTube channel and my Facebook page. That goes even higher in the Heritage chart. And I thought, wow, this is fabulous. So what I've been doing since then is writing some new material, and I've got a new song coming out probably maybe the last week of August, called, funny enough, the title is Do You Remember Me? I know there's probably people sitting at home going, no, we don't, naff off. But seriously, and what I've done is I've got two versions. I've got the original sort of ballady version, but I've done a dance. I've got someone to do a fabulous dance mix, and it's going to come out. And I'm cutting the 7-inch this week. We've got a 12-inch dance mix. We're editing it down to a 7-inch, and it's really happy and upbeat and very sunny. So I'm going to bring that out towards the end of August and see what happens.
And of course, the Yell album is called Let's Go, so people can get that out.
some cracking ballads on there, produced by Colin Thurston, who produced Duran Duran, you know, classy people, thankfully. So give, you know, look out, Let's Go, and give it a spin, see what you think.
Have you got social media and websites as well, Daniel?
There's a Daniel James Facebook page, official Daniel James. I've got a Insta page called Me Daniel James. I've got Twitter, Daniel James 1925, which is a tribute to my mum. Or if they want to listen to my material, I would love to have them on board.
Brilliant. Well, it's been great listening to your story, Daniel. Can you please introduce your new record?
Yes, this is a song I wrote about, it's a mixture really. It's a relationship that I once had, and I happened to see the person across a room a couple of years later, and I kind of remembered all the good things we had together. And there was a little part of me wanted to go back, but then I realized it had ended for a reason. So if you've ever been in a relationship and ever been wondered whether you should go back again, this song is about that. And also, it's also a bit of a tongue-in-cheek, because I was once a pop star and I'm saying, do you remember me?
Yeah, brilliant, Daniel. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.